We are in chapter 13. We're on page Yud-Tes in the top numbers, which is like 37. We are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines from the top by the two dots. So he says, Hine, we're talking about the Beinoni and different aspects of the Beinoni and answering different questions which were raised in chapter 1. We talked before about the love of Hashem that a Beinoni has and the love of other people that a Beinoni has. So, that he has, for example, for love of Hashem, b'shas tefila, when he's davening, such that we said that it's possible that Rava could make the mistake and say, for example, I'm a Beinoni.
Okay.
Because he never wasted any time, like a Beinoni never wastes any time. And when he came to davening, he davened like a Beinoni who has this inflamed love for God. It's just that with Rava, it didn't dissipate after davening. He just figured that he was like a person who davened the whole day. So this happens on the day he's gavris nefesh elokis through the domination and the strengthening of the godly soul at the time of davening. When you're talking about this love of Hashem compared to tzaddikim, and this point that he's going to mention is a crucial point and is a very basis of our avodas Hashem and how we can actually do any type of avoda for Hashem. Compare this love that a Beinoni has to the love that a tzaddik has. That the tzaddik is called Oivdei Hashem Be'emes Lamitai. They are serving Hashem in an absolute true love of Hashem. The translation or the definition of MS, when you say truth, means that it never ceases. Something is true has to be, like as the word intimates, from the beginning to the middle to the end. All has to be consistent. Mm-hmm. And there is something for it to be true has to be ongoing. So a tzaddik has an ongoing love of Hashem. The Beinoni, his love dissipates. So how is it then we can say that the Beinoni is serving Hashem in any truthful way? So compare the love that a Beinoni has when he's in the middle of davening and his heart is just like volcanoing all over the place. Mm-hmm. Compare it to a tzaddik, it's not true at all. Because as soon as he gets done davening, it dissipates, it goes away. It says, lips of truth stand forever. The tongue of falseness falls away. But, comparably speaking, and this is where it gets good enough. What the Alter Rebbe says that Hashem demands of us is not that we act like tzaddikim, because not everybody gets to be a tzaddik. Rather, you should act as good as you could possibly act. That's all. And that then becomes your 100%. In other words, Hashem is grading us on a curve. Hashem knows what our talents and capabilities are. And if we're utilizing our talents and capabilities 100%, A+. Because Hashem is the one who gave us those things. Mm-hmm. If a person has an IQ of 90, so he can only be expected to intellectualize that of a person a level of 90, not of a person who's got an IQ of 180. No one's going to expect it of him. So he says, so therefore, Nikra Avodas Tama Be'emes Lamita Shelehem. So this is then called their level of truth. So in other words, this is unlike, say, like Lahavdil in Buddhism, you have something called Nirvana.
Right.
Which Nirvana is a state of existence that people all try to achieve. It's like one goal to get to.
And not that anybody ever does, according to
Right. That. So we don't have that. We don't have a goal to get to. We have individual goals that we have to achieve. And if you achieve an individual goal, That's fine. It's wonderful. Reb Zusha of Anapoli was quoted as saying, when I get to Shemayim, when I get to heaven, they're not going to ask me, Zusha, how come you weren't like Moshe? And they're not going to ask me, Zusha, how come you're not like Rabbi Akiva? Mm-hmm. They're going to ask me, Zusha, how come you weren't like Zusha?
Like you were supposed to be.
Yeah, because that's all that Hashem asks of us, is that we do what we can do. That's all. Mm-hmm. And Hashem never will ask of us anything more. There's a famous story that I tell of Zundel the tea merchant. Have I told you this story? I may have told it like to Akiva. I've listened to all the tapes, you know, when I go back and, you know, see that when I get them all posted online, God willing, that I'll be telling the same story already three times. You know, people will be listening and like, oh yeah, he told that story three chapters ago. So, but in the city of Lubavitch in the 1870s, there were two tea merchants. Both of them were named Zundel, which Zundel is not a very common name. How many Zundels do you know? I've never met anybody named Zundel. But it's one of those like European Yiddish names. To have two people in the same village named Zundel, so one of them was Zundel Gross and the other one was Zundel Klein. Gross means big and Klein means small. Mm-hmm. Zundel Gross was called Zundel Gross because he was a tea magnate. He was very well. And Zundel Klein was a schlamazel. He could barely make ends meet. Now, Lubavitch was not big enough to have a train station. And the telegraph was always located in the train station. What would happen? Someone would get a telegram. Is the telegraph operator would get on his bicycle and he would travel the 7 versts, I'm not sure how far a verst is, from, I believe it was Vitebsk to Lubavitch, and he would deliver the telegram. So once he comes into town and he says, I have a telegram for Zundel the tea merchant, is what it said. So he says, we have two Zundel tea merchants. So he says, oh no, just says Zundel the tea merchant. He says, give it to him. Okay, it was Zundel Klein. Reads, opens up the telegram. Your shipment of tea was confiscated at the border. You know where tea comes from, right? Tea comes from all the tea in
China.
Okay. For the last 500 years, the border between China and Russia has been closed. And it seems to manage that the Russians still manage to get all the tea that they need. Okay, so certain things, I guess, it turned to, you know, we need tea, so we'll let that go. You know, so
tea settled the world in some
way. Yeah,
tea party. Exactly. Everything has to do with tea.
So, I mean, there's a story. Just as it's a story on the side of the story. That Erev Pesach, right after davening, Levi Yitzchak Berdichev went to the town smuggler and said, can you get me 3 yards of black Chinese silk? He said, sure, when do you want it? He said, I want it immediately. He came back an hour later, he had 3 yards of black Chinese silk. Okay? So he said, thank you very much. He says, wait until the afternoon. The afternoon comes, and everybody's like running around Erev Pesach. And he knocks on a door, and he says, opens up the door, says, oh, Rabbi, what can I do for you? So he said, I'm looking for a piece of pumpernickel. So the guy fell on the floor at his feet, crying, Rabbi, why would you think that I would have Erev Pesach right before, you know, a piece of pumpernickel, please forgive me, Rabbi, for any wrongdoing that I made. He says, it's okay. And he knocked on a bunch more doors, and he got basically the same response. So then he went to the big shul and he opened up the doors of the Aron HaKodesh and he said, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, at the border there are guards and the guards have instructions to shoot to kill anybody who is caught smuggling. And yet we see in an hour I was able to get contraband goods. You didn't put up any borders. And you didn't put up any guards. You just told people they're not allowed to eat chametz from this time on. And you see what it is that they didn't do it. Don't you think it's time you sent Mashiach already? So, evidently, the answer must have been no, because he didn't. But the idea, you got to understand the story. So, back to the original story. So, the he reads the story, all the tea in China, your tea has been confiscated at the border. So, he thinks for himself, my tea has been confiscated at the border. My whole shipment is gone. It means my creditors won't be able to get paid. That means that I'm going to get thrown into the street. My kids will starve. I'll probably die. And he fainted right in the street. So if somebody faints in the street, it's because it's a big commotion. And so there's a whole crowd gathering around him. And they revive him. And he says, my tea. And he fainted again. And every time that he woke up, he would say, my tea. And he would faint again. So somebody went off to the Rebbe, there was a fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe at the time, the Rebbe Marash, and told him what was going on. And he said, the next time he wakes up, before he can say my tea, just tell him there was a mistake, and the telegram was for the other Zundel. That's what they did, and he was, oh, okay, fine. In the meantime, what happened is the telegraph operator comes back into town. He has a telegram addressed to Zundel Gross. Zundel Gross opens up. Your last shipment has been confiscated at the border. You've lost the entire shipment. He goes, no, but okay, there'll be another shipment. Puts it in his pocket and goes, right. Okay? So now, what happens is there's a whole furor. The Rebbe knows who the telegram is for before the telegram comes. He's got to open the prophecy. It's a nevuah over here. So his older brother, there was a little bit of competition between the Ma'aril and the Rebbe Marash, the Tzemach Tzedek's third son, who later became the Rebbe of Kapust, and the Rebbe Marash, who was the youngest son, who became the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he said to him, the word in the street is that you have openly prophesied. And he said, basically, not on the exact Lashonis, but prophesized. It says that Hashem only gives you what you can handle, and that Zundel Klein couldn't handle that news. That meant what? It wasn't for him. Because what Hashem expects us is that we be able to do what we're able to do and nothing more. He's never going to throw something at us which is beyond what we're able to handle. And He doesn't expect us to do more than we're able to handle. Okay? So that's why it is that when it is that when a Beinoni is serving Hashem and he's davening and he feels this love for Hashem, so then, he's doing it on his level of truth. For him, it's called truth. And that's fine. As he says, Emes Lamita Shelahem, each one according to their own level of truth. Ish kefi madregosoi, but madregos habeinini. Each one according to the level of beinini that he's able to achieve. So just like it is that there's different levels of tzaddik, v'ralo, and different levels of rasha, v'tovlo, so he's going to say there's different levels of beinoni as well.
Okay.
Okay, you're going to have beinonim that are going to be able to, as like Rava did, when they close the book, the love that they have for Hashem is not going to dissipate. And we already answered the question, well, why isn't this person a tzaddik? If he's walking around feeling this intense, passionate love for God all the time, is because his Yetzirah and his animal soul is still saying, let's get this guy. Whereby a tzaddik, it's not. How's he going to know if he's a tzaddik or a beinoni? He's not. And but as soon as he says, I think I'm a tzaddik, then we know he's not a tzaddik. Then we know that one already. Okay. And I'm going to say, the ultimate is I'm putting myself out on a limb, that the love which a Beinoni expresses at the time of davening, I'm also going to call it lips of truth exist forever. Why? Even though he closes the book and it dissipated. Because any time this Beinoni wants to go daven, he arouses this love again, and he's able to daven in the same way. B'hi's gavres b'shas tefillah, when he dominates over his animals all the time of davening, mi de yom b'yom, each and every day, alidei achana roya l'chol nefesh, according to the proper preparations that it's going to take. Kefi erko medregosa, according everyone according to their own level and limits. Okay, this is not going to, you can't just open up a book, open up a siddur, and expect to have this passionate, burning love for Hashem. Right. That's even recognized in Shulchan Aruch. I'm not sure if it's in Aruch Hayim, Tzadik Beis, Tzadik Dalet, somewhere in the Tzadiks. There's a entire chapter in Shulchan Aruch devoted to, a short chapter, devoted to having kavana and getting ready before davening. And it says over there in the Shulchan Aruch, which is not a philosophy book, right, it's a halacha, and is there for what? That a person, before they daven, have to sit down and arouse their intention and think about the greatness of Hashem. They have to do Yizbanunus. Yep. It's a halacha.
It's a halacha to do Yizbanunus.
It's a halacha.
Yeah. And it's just something that people that don't even...
Right. Well, we're not talking about some people. Okay. That's what he says, according to Hachana. And the Friedrich Rebbe writes that according as about as far as davening is concerned, the preparation that you do before davening is probably more important than the davening that you do. Because that's going to set the focus and the tone for your davening. And that's the same part. Don't read the newspaper before you go to daven.
That could really,
you know,
yeah, that could mess with up. You.
Yeah.
When I first saw my Rebbe, he came in for... Hanukkah, two Hanukkahs ago.
Yeah.
And he sits down, he's got one of those old school menorahs with like the kind of the wall behind it, you know.
Right.
And so he goes and he, I remember like he carefully like measured like every cup, you know, make sure it was all the same. And then even when he checked all the sitzes, even, it was, whatever, he checked like, all the sitzes, and he like touched the nearest mezuzah, whatever. And then he sat down and like, and then he explained like, you know, they explain like what you said, like, and he said, so tell us, you know, the preparation for doing mitzvahs is as important as doing right kavanah.
Yep. Okay. Each one according to their own level. Kihine midas emes hu midas shel Yaakov. The attribute of truth is referred to as the attribute of Yaakov. Hanikra briach hatichon amavriach min akotza lakotza. In the Mishkan, in the sanctuary, in the desert, the walls were held together with three braces. The top one was called Avraham, the bottom one was called Yitzchak, and the middle one was called Yaakov. The top and bottom brace were on the outside of the wall, and were holding the walls through brackets. The middle one actually went through a hole, which went through the middle of the beams. The beams were stacked, were aligned next to each other, and so the horizontal pole went through the beams so as to brace it from the inside. But the thing about this one is that when it got to the corner, the beam itself curved and continued all the way around, so that it went through all 100 or so braces all the way around. 100 beams that made up the wall of the sanctuary. And as it says, that the middle brace went from one end to the other. And Yaakov is called, it's analogous of Yaakov. Yaakov is called a man of truth. Titan emesli Yaakov is the expression. He gave truth to Yaakov. And the attribute, that meaning to say, that this might sound contradictory, but there are different levels of truth. That it goes from one end of the spectrum to the other. And everybody has their truth. Not that there's one truth. Okay, you have the Torah, the Torah is true. But people understand the Torah differently. And we're told that there are depending who you ask, there are 49 correct interpretations of the Torah and 49 incorrect interpretations of the Torah. And some say that there are 120 interpretations of the Torah and 48 of them are not correct. you know, different, which would lead very, very many valid, 72 valid interpretations of the Torah. Some say there's 70 interpretations of the Torah.
770?
Not 770, no. Not that many. Okay. So that there are, each one is a correct interpretation.
Right.
So it says about Shlomo HaMelech, that Shlomo HaMelech had a tremendous power of explaining concepts. And he had, for example, it says that he could give 3,000 examples for any one concept. And it wasn't that he gave, okay, this one he's giving an example of a cat, and this one's giving an example of a dog, and this one's giving an example. No. It's basically, it's the same example, it's just different animals. But he would give different examples on different levels of understanding so that he'd be able to reach all the way to a person who had a very low level of understanding. And give them some sort of very coarse mushal, some sort of coarse example. And through that, then they would be able to understand the concept. Because the ultimate being is not understanding the example. The ultimate is the understanding of what's being exemplified. And there's only one thing which is being exemplified. It's that one concept in Torah. But Shlomo HaMelech was able to bring it down to all these different levels of understanding so that everybody should be able to grasp on it. That's what truth is able to do, is able to reach down to the lowest of levels. So that's what he says. It's called the Bria HaTikun. Your question is
transcendent.
Yep.
Okay.
That's great. When he's talking about Nikra Bria HaTikun, Mina Kosa Lakatsa, Meraim HaMailas and Madregas, the self called Dagon, from the highest of levels to the lowest of levels. Vachol Mailo Madregam Avriach Teich Nikudis Emtsois. This, just like the analogy of the beam went right through the brace, went right through the middle of the beam. There was a hole that was drilled in the middle of the beam, and the brace went right through the middle. So it is also with the attribute of truth. The attribute of truth goes right through all to the core and crux of the issue, stripping away all of the side points which are not necessary, and gets right to the essential point. And that a person, the understanding of that essential point of any one specific idea is going to depend on a person's ability to understand. As Shlomo HaMelech understood that there was 3,000 different levels of understanding to which he was able to relate. Shehuna kudus v'uchinus midas emes shelah. And that one quintessential point of that idea is the truth of that idea. And he says, in emes, when you're talking about emes, emes is nachal bli mitzarim, is a inheritance without limit. Ve'ein lo shir l'mayla adroim hamaylas, and it has no limits as to how high a person is able to reach. We call mayla z'madrega shalamata him ka'ayin l'gavi mayla z'madrega shalamayla mehem. And he's going to explain in this note, the bracket after this, that when a person achieves a certain level, so the previous levels in which they were on become like nothing. So you could think, for example, if you're just start learning Aleph-Bays. Okay, so you've mastered the Aleph-Bays, now you've gone on to reading words. And once you got into reading words, now you go into learning. Mm-hmm. So a person who is able to learn, him reviewing the Aleph base that they learned way back when, listen, I learned it when I was 6, why couldn't I learn it now? I'll sit down now, I'll take out a book, and I'll sit, Aleph, Beis, Gimel. Okay. Why can't I do that? Is because when I get it up to a level which is above the previous level, the previous level appears like, it seems to be like nothing.
Right.
And in fact, if you were to open up a Hebrew primer and start reading Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, you would be guilty of wasting time.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's not called studying.
Yeah. So it's not a real chazor. It's not real.
Right. It's not. You know, you've already done it already. You know the aleph bays. Once you got it, you got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it says even more than that. If a person's learning Mishnah when they should be learning Gemara, so it says he's wasting his time. It's called Bittul Torah. Likewise, also, if a person's learning Gemara, they should be learning Kabbalah, for example. It's also Bittul Torah.
Unless they're learning with someone who... Or if they're teaching someone else.
Yeah.
Which, you know,
okay.
Is that... I mean...
Yeah, fair assessment. I mean, it depends on what they're doing.
If they're just... No, okay.
Yeah, so... is known to those who are initiated with the esoteric wisdom. Because the higher level, the higher part, the brain and head of the lower level, are below the level of the feet of the level above. That the feet of the ministering angels are correspond to every to all of them. What's the deal over here? So it says in like it says in the Gwenzoff, it says in Masechta Chagiga that you have 500 years walk around the earth. I've never been able to figure out what that means. Then you have 500 years walk between each of the seven heavens. And then it says that above the seven heavens is you have the feet of the Chayas HaKadosh, the holy animals. And it says that the feet are equal to the whole spectrum of creation that which to which we live. And then it says, and above that is the ankle. And the ankle is so much so above from the previous levels as though the levels aren't like, don't even exist at that point. And then he has the knee. And it says the knee is so far above, it's as though the levels of ankle and foot, etc., of feet of Chayas HaKadosh, and all the things in the Seder, and the whole entire creation process are all like nothing. It goes all the way up to, the Gemara goes all the way up to the head. So when you come to the head, so the head compared to all the other parts of the of this malach, so the other those other body parts are like nothing, and the head stands stands above. That's where the Medrash ends. So the point being that when a person is indeed studying, now when a person achieves a new level, the new spiritual level that a person is on makes the level that they were on nothing. As you can see, for example, you look at your lives as you go through school. Okay, so when you get to graduate, when you graduated kindergarten and wound up in first grade, so suddenly what you're doing in kindergarten was, you know, it's that's baby stuff. You're a first grader, I'm not a baby, I'm in first grade. Okay, then you start the math, which math is one of those accumulative subjects. You can't multiply before you can learn, before you know how to add. So the math is an accumulative amount of knowledge. And the stuff that you learn at the end of the year is much harder than you learn at the beginning of the year, but you have to work to get to there. But to such an extent is it, he says, well, listen, I have... in this book that I'm learning of elementary calculus, so it has there a whole equation, 2 and 2 is 4. How are you going to get to calculus if you didn't do arithmetic first?
Right.
You know, so it's all acute. But at the same time, the calculus is something you're putting your head into, you're trying to figure out, whereas the 2 plus 2 equals 4, that's, I thought you got that one already.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what he says, that the feet, no, the higher level of the highest level of the lower level is going to be lower than the lowest level of the higher level. And Hilmanus like Vayim Raglim Madrigas Hol Yain, that they are lower than the level of feet and heel of the higher level. Mehankamayim Rizal Ragli Achayis Kineged Kolam. He's quoting that piece of Gemara in Masechta Chagiga, that the feet of the heavenly angels correspond to the entire spectrum of creation. And then the knees correspond to everything, including the feet. Okay, and the shoulder includes everything, including the knees.
Okay.
So, so when you're talking about attribute of truth, so coming around as to how is it that we're able to achieve anything is because whatever we're doing, if we're doing it to keeping focused that this is how we're serving Hashem and we're doing it in the best manner possible, so then we continue to grow in our avodas Hashem. And when a person achieves some sort of a new level, whatever that might be, that they're doing more, they're feeling more, so then the level that they were on previously is nothing. So much so we call it even a waste of time. If they have progressed to such a spiritual level, to go backwards is considered a waste of time. Yeah, so?
But they still have that foundation on what they've learned. Like, they can still bank on it. They just shouldn't go back and, you know.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between that and, you know, doing like Dele Chazorah and like what's...
The point of Chazorah is to get it into your head, which is a very good thing. Whereas there's certain things that if you got it already, then there's no point in doing... I don't say there's no point in the Chazorah, but if it's something which is of a pre-primer level... So there's no, it's a waste of time to sit there with us. A Lubavitch sitter that has an olive, bays, right. Gimel, dalet, you know, you just, okay, mainly if you're just starting out and you don't know, never learned the olive bays, so this is like, but as soon as you get it, go further. All right, Lechai is going to get cool. Okay, we're going to stop here because I am crashing.
Okay. I think that was a good place to stop because we're not in the middle of something.
Right.